Hello everyone and welcome to episode 15 of the Talking Fitbar podcast. My name's Derek Clark and every week I bring you an exclusive in-depth interview with some of the most colourful and interesting characters in the game. If you've missed any so far, you can listen to them back on iTunes, Spotify, SoundCloud, Podbean and also on derekclarksports.co.uk. This week I had the pleasure of sitting down with former goalkeeper turned barber and radio host Matt Glennon. I met Matt at the Salon G27 on the outskirts of Huddersfield and he spoke candidly and humorously about his career between the sticks, where he starred for several clubs including the Terriers, Carlisle, Falkirk, St Johnstone and many more. It was an absolute joy to hear Matt's story and I'm sure you'll enjoy listening to his stories as well. So sit back and enjoy this week's episode of the Talking Fitbar podcast. Welcome everyone to another edition of the Talking Fitbar podcast. I'm delighted to say we're joined this week by goalkeeper turned barber Matt Glennon. Matt, thanks very much for joining us.
Yeah, no problem at all.
Very colourful career, shall we say. We'll kick all the way back, born 1978 in Stockport. What was life like growing up back then?
It was actually full of football on the streets back in the day there when you play on the corner. Obviously you're on your little council estate and you're smashing the hell out of somebody's hedges and fences. Losing footballs constantly on the park. We used to have massive big games between different estates, which sometimes got a little bit tasty. So you got to learn how to look after yourself that way on the parks of Stockport.
Yeah, but you always wanted to play in goals?
No, not at all. A bit of outfield, bit of this and that. When I actually got asked to play football, I think I started a bit of right back and a bit of something. Keeper didn't turn up, so I ended up playing. And yeah, the first half of that game, I remember because the team I played for had been beaten 9 by this team twice, 2-0 at half-time, having a great game, thinking, yeah, this is me. We got beaten 9-1 by the end of it. So from a very early age you realise that when you think you've cracked it, you haven't.
Did you have any sort of idols that you looked up to back then, sort of role models?
Yeah, back in then days, when I started getting a little bit more serious and I started looking into goalkeeping a bit more, because I was a bit of a late one coming into football compared to the 3-year-olds that Man United and Man City like to get these days. I was a bit older than that. So it was your Peter Schmeichels, it was your Peter Shiltons, mm-hmm. people like that. And I used to ball boy for Stockport County as well. And I remember Paul Cooper turning up and I'd just read Peter Shilton's book, the one book I think I've actually finished. And I think he'd saved 9 penalties in a row, 11 penalties in a row or something like that, which was ridiculous, which penalties feature quite heavily in my career, as we'll come back to later on as well. So just people around then, so you're talking late 80s, early 90s.
So when did you sort of realise you were quite good in goals?
When the ball stopped going past me as much. it was pretty much an overnight thing. And then say on the park we'd be playing one man Wembley, as we called it then, where one in goal and everyone had to try and score past you, and it just ended up me standing all the time. And then when I got a lot of rollickings from the managers for letting a goal in, that's when you realise you were quite good. Even when it wasn't your fault and your team was rubbish, when you let a goal in, it was suddenly like an annual event where everyone got upset. You just worked hard. I had a great fella called Alan at my Sunday League club, a team called Oswood United, where he'd stay behind and do a little bit of goalkeeping with me because he played at an half-decent level himself. And it just progressed from there. Then obviously your scouts come down. I end up playing for 7 teams within the year with your Greater Manchester teams, your school team, as well as working in carpet shops and things like that. It was brilliant. And then I'm just schlep over for training and all different places. You just get better, progress. And the fact that I loved it as well and didn't get, trying not to get too down with letting goals in. I still remember crying a couple of times after letting 6 in, you know what I mean? And I was 31 at the time, but no, it was back in the day.
Yeah,
and I cared about what I did, and I started getting better at it, and I just took it very seriously in match day. I've had great fun, don't be wrong.
Yeah,
a lot of fun in my football career, but I always took actual match days very serious.
How did the Bolton move come about? Did they just scout you?
Yeah, well, I was at Blackburn at the time, and it was just too far from Stockport, so my dad couldn't always take me for, you know what I mean, for work reasons and other reasons, and it was just a long way from Stockport, and it was great, and they had a good goalkeeper coach there who'd played at a decent level as well, and it was too much. And then Bolton came knocking. I can't remember where they scouted me from. think he turned up a few times because he's been a friend over the years. And he just said, "Do you want to come down?" I was like, "Yep." And then ended up with, I could get the train. Train at 13 years old from Stockport to Bolton, which again wouldn't happen. And they getting home at 11 o'clock at night on a Monday night and then to go into school the next day. But it was fantastic. And obviously, as I signed for Bolton, they got better. Bruce Rioch was in charge. Mm. And next thing I know, I'm signing me YTS after turning Man United down, I will say. I'll chuck that in there. I know everyone did. Wow. But the great Manchester manager works at Manchester United. He still works there now. Mm. And they said, if it doesn't work out at Bolton, you can come over. But me and my arrogance was like, well, Peter Schmeichel's there. I won't get a game. I'll get a game at Bolton. So when I started there at 16, just as he went to the Premier League, beat Reading at Wembley, I was sat on my sofa watching it. I think I'd had a little vodka and tonic as well, actually, watching it, because the school had just finished. And I thought, bloody hell, I'm going to be in the Premier League. And it was just absolutely amazing. Obviously, Burnden Park,
yeah,
back in the day there. So it was an early start, 6:30 in the morning to get the bus and the train and get there for my Premier League wage of £41 a week.
Wow.
Plus expenses.
Rolling it.
Yeah, rolling it. And it's but I even got in the squad at 17 and I was on £44 a week.
Oh,
yeah, geez. Plus less expenses. Imagine now turning a Premier League 17-year-old in the Premier League now that I was in the squad in the Premier League and I was on £40 a week. Never mind that. So yeah, it was just an absolutely brilliant time.
Did you notice a big difference when you went to a team like that in terms of sort of training and the people you're hanging about with?
What happened was Bruce Rioch pretty much got rid of everyone who got promoted in that squad, and then we brought in all these new players, Alan Thompsons and people like that, and training just got better and better. Roy McFarlane took over with Colin Todd, and what you noticed is you spend more time there. Mm. You know, even back in the day when 25 years ago when I started, you were starting to move towards the 2 and 3 sessions a day then. Mm-hmm. And the training ground got better. Obviously, the level of the standard of the grass that you were playing on, it wasn't just muddy fields anymore. It was, everything had to be right. Reebok obviously put a lot of money into the club as well, as we later on moved into the Reebok Stadium. And the other problem was it was a bit of a too quick a rise, a bit like Huddersfield Town going into the Premier League. You end up getting battered by quite a few teams. I remember Man United turned up and I was in charge of like the tunnel. It was my YTS job. Okay. And make sure everything was going, and you've got Cantona walking past you, Gary Pallister walking past you, Peter Schmeichel, and you're going, wow, they're just monsters. And we had a player called David Lee, who was our quickest player. He's our lightning player. Roy Keane, Man United's slowest player, left him for dead. I still remember it now, watching this on the pitch. They beat us 6-0. We didn't lay a glove on him. They just got back on the bus and off they went. It was a crazy standard even back then.
Yeah, but you're disappointed not to make the breakthrough there at Bolton?
Yeah, definitely. It was one of my real bugbears in my career, really, because Keith Brannigan, who was an absolutely fantastic fellow and a great mentor of mine, goalkeeper, would be injured till Friday. Then he'd be fit and then he'd play. So I'd be second choice, first choice or second choice for a lot of the week. Then suddenly I was second or third choice when it comes Saturday. So going on loan early doors wasn't great. Obviously, it was just, it was not great. And then I did go on loan, but to Championship club. So I was just as cover at 18, 19. Then I started playing league football. And I remember I played against Arsenal in about 2001, Bergkamp, Youngberg, and the FA Cup on loan at Carlisle United. Fantastic day. Brunton Park was absolutely full, 19,000, I think, was there. They've never a crowd like that in a long time, because it was back in the Michael Knighton days when that man was destroying the club. Mm-hmm. So played, brilliant. Sam Allardyce rings me a week later, you've got to come back, you've got to play in the FA Cup and then play the rest of the Championship games. I said, well, I can't. He says, what do you mean? He says, I'm cup tied. You let me play. So I would have gone back and started my career. And Sam Allardyce was a superb manager. And if you do well by him, if you look at someone like Kevin Nolan, he'll stick with you throughout your career and throughout your time. I just unfortunately missed out, and then obviously I got sold before I got a chance to make my debut.
Yeah, and some of the loan spells, I mean, you spent time at Bristol Rovers as well, didn't you? But was Ian Holloway the manager then?
That was when the petrol strike first came on, and I had to get a train down there. So I got the phone call at 8 in the morning from Sam saying, you go to Bristol Rovers to make your league debut tomorrow against Wigan. So it was like, fantastic, but you've got to come training first. So I'm stood at Manchester Piccadilly, had to go all the way there, then go back to Stockport, then go back on the train and down to Bristol. Got there at like 11 o'clock at night. I had to stand all the way as well because it was that full.
Oh, no,
I say, because no one could use the cars because there was no petrol about. Like a lot of people don't know, I was actually banned from driving at the time for speeding. So, they actually published that I couldn't use my car because the petrol crisis is actually because I didn't have a licence at the time. Got there. And then next day, met Ian Holloway. I'd not been down that part of the country before. I thought his accent was a wind-up when he was talking to me. I think Gary Penrice as well. I thought, are they doing me a kipper? And they got his in at like 12 o'clock. And so I'm sat around, didn't know anyone. A bit nervous because it's my league debut. Mm. But it was great. Got man of the match, got a clean sheet, a bottle of champagne. And had a good night in Bristol that night.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, they had a lad on loan from Man United at the time who in his contract he had to play if he was fit. So I turn up for the next game thinking, well, of course I'm playing. I kept a clean sheet against Wigan, got mad at the match, and I'm sat watching. Yeah. So I sneakily got asked to be called back because I wasn't going to sit there for any more time watching football when I'd got the buzz for it now and I wanted to start playing.
Yeah. Hull City time there spent, were you disappointed to leave Bolton during that time and go there?
Sort of, because I'd had a great time and obviously going into the Premier League. But I think it was time for me to move on, get a new challenge, get myself playing regular first team football. And Hull City came in, Bristol Rovers came back in again. I'd actually had a fallout with Sam about Bristol Rovers because they tried to buy me in the January. I said no. He said yes. I said no. This is over the phone. He told me to get on a plane. I said no. And then my goal, because I used to go back to Bolton. I went to Bolton Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday to train with my goalkeeper coach, go to Carlisle Thursday, Friday, play Saturday. So my goalkeeper rang me up and said, you are now banned from the training ground. So Sam banned me because I wouldn't go, because they offered quite a few quid for me, so he wouldn't let me go to the in training. So I had to stay in Carlisle for all the time. And as you know, I didn't have a licence, so I wasn't going up and down the motorway either. And it was a different place, Carlisle, than it is now. Still brilliant, but it wasn't masses to do. So I stayed there, and then they came back in for me Bristol at the end of the season. But Hull had already arranged a fee. Brian Little, great fella, lovely fella. So we ended up going down the motorway to Hull.
Before we move on, Bolton, I mean, they've went through a tough time lately, haven't they? What have you made of it? Has it been sad to see, you see the sort of decline? Of course, they've got the takeover now, so things look to be on the up, but it looks like they're going to be relegated this year as well.
Yeah, it does. It looked a little bit like Bury at one point. You thought this isn't going to happen. When I left, obviously Phil Garsat was chairman, everything was fine, Sam signing good players, he's not spending fortunes, just giving them good wages, that's what he liked to do with when he brought these players in. Mm-hmm. And then I went back a few years later, I can't remember why, and then they were £135 million in debt or something. Where's that come from? They've not been relegated, they've been in Europe, yeah, they've got a decent squad, but they're not spending £50 million on players. So it was a bit of a shock to see that. And then obviously the man wanted to get rid of the club, and then because it's Ken Anderson who came in, doesn't seem particularly had the best interests of Bolton Wanderers. And then I didn't even realise it wasn't called the Reebok Stadium when I went past it as well. It was the Macron, and now it's the University of Bolton Stadium, and it was just terrible to see. Mm-hmm. As I say, Burnden Park, some of the best times of my life. Some of the skintest times of my life, but some of the best times with the big baths and having to run around the track in just your underpants because the jobs haven't been done properly. Yeah, so something else you won't get away with again. And the AstroTurf at the back where you locked the door and it was shin pads optional, basically just kick the crap out of each other for an hour.
Brilliant.
And it was a brilliant place. And then into the Reebok was fantastic, and we had some good trips away with Sam, and then to see where they've gone, but they're still alive, they're still going. The manager's a good steady manager now, they've got in as well. So hopefully they're on the up. It's a big ask for them to stay up. You've got a lot of clubs have a terrible, terrible season for them. Is it Keith Hill
that's gone in as manager now?
He knows what he's doing. I think he's bringing Flitcroft in with him as well. Yeah. A decent team for next season, and see if he can get them back up again.
Yeah, your time at Carlisle then, your fond memories of playing up there?
Brilliant, absolutely brilliant. The first spell was amazing. I had 8 clean sheets in my last 8 home games. I don't remember doing that. I'm not saying the social life was good, but we did have a good time, and it was with Ian Atkins was manager, crazy man. Just Yeah, he was a very peculiar fella, but in a good way, because I ended up living with him in the hotel when I was banned from going home for a lot of the time. And then, obviously, I went away, and after leaving Hull, I went back again. My first daughter was born up there, just outside Carlisle. Lived in a beautiful little village called Cumwhitten, fantastic little country pub. It was just a beautiful place to live. Even as a young lad, a young couple, me and my wife Nicola, were there in that little village. It was just a great little community.
You played in the Football League Trophy final at the Millennium Stadium, but disappointed to come out on the losing side. But what is it like to play there in that sort of stage?
Well, I was a bit upset that Wembley was being done up, because I wanted to play Wembley, obviously. But yeah, it was a magnificent stadium. I think it was 50-odd thousand there. I think 50-odd thousand were Bristol fans as well, obviously only around the corner. I think we took 12,500, which was great. It's a long way for Carlisle fans to come all the way down to the Millennium. Pitch wasn't fantastic. Change rooms weren't brilliant, to tell you honestly. Really? You can see all the roof up there. I think they were still doing a bit of work. It was great. I wasn't happy with my performance either, so that tarnished it a little bit for me. There's a couple of crosses that I dropped. I made a decent save. They scored the rebound. Maybe try and put it a bit further wide. So it was great. The build-up was brilliant. Well, my daughter was born 7 days before. And I also crushed the chairman's £100,000 Mercedes about 4 days before. Yeah, I was on a country line, took off CL600 Mercedes or something it was, and smoke and bits of car everywhere. Jesus. And me and Peter Murphy, the captain, were in the car. We had time as we were flying through the air to look at each other and go, oh no. Landed. And yeah, he wasn't bothered. He was a Dublin man. We had Roddy Collins was manager then. Yeah. Steve Collins, the boxer's brother. He again, brilliant character, as was John, the chairman, thankfully. So it was because my daughter was an emergency cesarean, so we had 24 hours of that. My wife stayed in. I had to drive then to play Oxford away on the Tuesday. She was born on the Sunday. And then I had to drive back from Oxford when the team went off to get back on the Wednesday to pick my wife up to bring her home. And my daughter, then go down to Millennium to play the game, while also writing off £100,000 Mercedes. So yeah, it was a busy week. So I'm not surprised I wasn't entirely focused on the game. But no, it was great. I've actually been talking to someone today about as soon as you turn 16 and you stop playing kiddies football, cup finals, and you know, things like that suddenly are quite sparse. Because if you think about it, there's one FA Cup, there's one League Trophy, there's one FA Trophy, and that's pretty much it, really. Yeah. And then Premier League gets won by pretty much the same people. The FA Cup, you know what I mean, pretty much gets beat by the same elite group. So to play in any sort of final in professional football is brilliant.
Yeah. What made you decide to go up north to Scotland?
To play in the big games. I got offered more money by League One, League Two clubs, in all honesty. But I thought, no, I'm going to go and play at Rangers and Celtic and Hearts. Obviously, this was pre-crash as well.
Yeah.
So Hearts were paying big money out still. Hibs were still getting 16,000-17,000 fans, because obviously when all the money disappeared, a certain amount of the fans did as well, seemingly. So it was just absolutely brilliant. I only played 20 odd games in all honesty before me and Mr. Hughes had a bit of a fallout, and it was brilliant, absolutely brilliant. I remember having a Magic Johansson playing for Celtic. We had a personal battle one night up there. John Hartson, when we're jumping into him and feel like I'd just been hit by a bleeding 10 tonner.
Big boy.
Yeah, big lad. It was like when you walk into a lamppost, just no give. And that's what it was like with him. And they say Rangers, just hairs on the back of your neck, just standing up. So those experiences, you know what I mean? Again, financially, awful, but I don't care. Yeah, it was about playing them big games, and yeah, they were fantastic.
You mentioned there John Hughes, he's quite a character, the guy. You said you had a falling out. What was it like to work under him?
Beginning, fine. And then he seemed to, I don't know, because we were doing really well, playing really good football. I don't know if that went to his head or went to someone else's head. But we were doing 120 kilogram squats on a Thursday afternoon, and physio's telling him that the lads are knackered and exhausted. He basically said, tell them to go themselves, because one of the lads heard him round the sideline. And it was crazy. And we just played against Dunfermline in a derby. Yeah. I got my first 10 out of 10 in the News of the World.
Wow.
It's a game that I didn't want, a game that I turned up with no confidence. I wasn't feeling good for some strange reason, or if I was coming down with something, but I really didn't want to play that day, which I did, but I saved everything. Hit me hand, hit me face, hit me nuts, anything. It was just unbelievable. And I come off the pitch, we win 1-0. Great. Then the next game, he decides to pick himself. He's 42. he's not really trained because we had a centre-half issues. Mm-hmm. Craig Ireland, I think, had done his knee. Kenny Milne was injured again. So it was a fact of he come in, but he wouldn't listen to anything. Every time I shot at keepers, he challenged me. Every time I was coming for a cross, he challenged me. So he came for his cross and I thought, I'm not care. I'm going to have to go through him because I need the ball. I ended up doing his cruciate. So that didn't go down well. And then we had some choice words in the changing room afterwards. But I said to him, I'm shouting keepers. I've just had the game of my life. And then I remember tipping one onto the bar. It's the bar. It comes back, hits me, and don't go in bloody in the back of the net. Obviously, nothing I can do about it. And he was really peculiar. Mm. And as I say, I don't think I said anything particularly out of order. There has been instances in my career where I have been out of order and I've let my mouth run away with me. It was ridiculous. I shouted keepers and there'd be no one near me. I'm just shouting it for a token shout.
Yeah.
And he's running at me to try and edit away so all the crowd can see, oh, look, I care more than everyone.
Yeah.
And it was, I wasn't impressed. So luckily, I was mates with Owen Coyle. So I got my football fix in and obviously my one and only league goal as well.
Before we touch on that, I was reading, doing some research. You played a game at Ibrox, you were 2-0 down, you came back and drew two each. What was that like to play?
Brilliant, as I say. The Celtic, the Rangers fans, you turn up and they're cheering and screaming as you're warming up. I come at half time, they're cheering and screaming as you're going still. And the atmosphere just never, ever stops. And say 2-0 down and we got back again. We get back into the game and it was just one of those days where you think, you know what I mean, we could end up getting splattered here, but we didn't. We at that time, we were playing some decent football. Mm. Russell Latapy, absolutely, you know, even ex-Rangers player.
I was going to mention
absolutely
him.
Superb. You know, we didn't have his fag in his mouth. He was just a really, really good player.
Well, I spoke to a boy that played with him as well, John Henry, and he says he was unreal. He just turned up, he was just effortless.
Yeah, he was, yeah. He's one of the people just loved his football.
Yeah.
I say loved his cigarette in the toilets at half time, which I found very peculiar. And I'm sat there going, "What the hell? What's that?" And it's Russell's in there. But he did. He just played the game with a smile on his face, take people on. He could strike it both footed. He was just a lovely footballer to play with and to watch.
Yeah. So you joined St Johnstone under Owen Coyle, and you mentioned you touched on it there. Your first goal. What was that like? Talk us through that.
See, as a manager, you should have fell out with me. Owen Coyle should have done because I outscored him that season. He was player manager as well at the time, and he gave me a ring. He said, "I know Yogi's not playing you because they know each other from I think he was at Falkirk."
Yeah,
Coyle was as assistant and a player there. So I'll come over play a few games, and they were close to. It was when Gretner had the money before sadly the chairman passed him. The money got whipped out of there. So we were close. We're up at Ross County. 2-1 down, we needed a win. Nipped up front, it's there on YouTube still to see, 25-yard strike. Yeah, top corner. And it was great, not quite sure how to celebrate it, so it was more of just run back because we needed that goal. We didn't get it, and as I say, outscored Coyle, and I think was the only goalkeeper in their history to score a goal as well, so it was good.
A chance to stay up there, but you came back down the road. Did you want to stay up in Scotland, or were you ready to move back down south?
No, it was time to move back again. As I say, they were in League One, and I know it shouldn't all come down to money, but it was nowhere near. I'd gone up there to experience the Premier League and took a massive wage cut to go up there, even from the level I was playing at. And it was like, no, it's time to come back down to England now. I didn't particularly have anything lined up, in all honesty, at that time. But fortunately, you know, in Huddersfield Town came knocking.
Yeah, and you've fond memories playing there as well, saving three spot kicks in the one game.
Yeah, well, I actually got the phone call from my agent the day before my wedding, which was great news. The wife's from Hull, I'm from Manchester, so it was right in the middle as well. Fantastic stadium. Peter Jackson, again, a great fella. I think that was, I was ever present that season as well. And with Frank Sinclair, when Frank signed for us, I was thinking, he's going to score past me. I know he's going to score past me because Frank loves to score an own goal, as we've all seen over his career. So in that game, he gave a penalty away. He did score past me with a deflection. I saved three penalties and we still got beat 2-1. So it was a mixture of everything that day. I still remember it. It was great from that personal point of view to save the three penalties. And obviously, there's not many people done it in the history of football. The win would have been nice though as well.
Yeah. Did you have a sort of? Did you like facing penalties? Did you have a sort of mindset when you were facing?
Yeah, I did. I saved quite a few for Carlisle as well. I saved. Mm. I've been quite good at penalties over the years. There's always some tells.
Yeah.
The top players, not so much tells. You know, as you drop down the divisions, as you see, you can sometimes just tell by run-ups I always used to look at the taker before he even picked the ball up, because I didn't argue with referees, because there's no point. He's not going to change his mind. Yeah. Oh, Matt, you're right, it's not a penalty. You have a free kick. You have a free kick. So I never argued. I'd just be looking at the geezer who looked like he was going to take the penalty. And a lot of the time they would give you a little tell. And it seemed to work quite well for me.
How much do you enjoy playing at the John Smiths?
Loved it, yeah. It was the first two and a bit years. I missed one game, I think, in 123 games. Got sent off at bloody Southendon. Missed the Leeds game. It was a great time in my life and a great time in my footballing career. It just, unfortunately, it came to a very abrupt end.
Yeah, and I was going to mention as well there, playing for Peter Jackson as well. What was he like to play under?
Just a great manager. Just one of those people that would get the best out of you, would talk to you, you know, would give you, you know what I mean, everything you needed to go out on a Saturday afternoon, along with his staff, Terry Orrith and Martin Booty as well. It was, as I say, it was a good time, but he never got given money. Didn't pay agents at the time. It was always stacked against him to fail.
Lee Clark comes in, of course. How did you find him?
I'm allowed to swear on this.
Yeah,
he was a twat. Yes. There's only a couple of people I don't speak to in football. He's one of them. He basically ruined my career from then onwards, and he didn't let me go on loan, lied to me constantly, and yeah, thoroughly enjoyed working with him. His training wasn't bad, to be fair, though. Training was decent, more to do with Derek Vazakli and Blackie that was in there as well. Excellent fitness coach, Derek Vazakli, great coach. Mm-hmm. But Lee Clark, no, I wouldn't if he was on fire.
Yeah, but you'd gutted to leave the club when the time came? Or I guess if he's in charge, then it makes it easy.
Yeah, I had to, because one of us was going to die. So, yeah, and it wasn't going to be me. No, it just, you know what I mean? There was chances to go to decent clubs on loan he didn't tell me about, which I found out from other people, other managers saying, oh, we tried to sign you, but he said you weren't going anywhere, but you weren't going to play yet. You know, and I'd played 2.5 years. We'd just beat Brighton. I'd saved a penalty then. We'd won 1-0, just beat Leeds at Elland Road. And next thing, I get dropped by a youth team manager. And then I'm watching football. And like, you know what I mean, Smithers has gone on to have a very good career. He'd let 11 goals in a couple of games in the reserves. I'm not quite sure that really, you know what I mean, tells you you're getting a chance in the first team. And they say I wasn't given a chance in cup games. Say you can go out on loan, do anything. And next thing, I end up at Bradford, which was an absolute waste of my time. Mm. Because I went in with Stuart McCauley, left after a week. I don't know if it's because I turned up, I don't know. he left after a week, and then Peter Taylor, another man who doesn't particularly like goalkeepers, and that was pretty much the start of my downward spiral. And yeah, it could have been very, very different, as a lot of players will say as well. Yeah. We can you know, pinpoint times in our career where it started going wrong, and for me, that was it.
Yeah, you joined Stockport County though, the hometown club. Were you pleased to join them?
I was on my debut again. I saved a penalty. Seems to be a thing going on there against Macclesfield local derby. Which was superb. He turned to the crowd. A lot of people I went to school with. A lot of people on the estate where I used to live. It was great. If they'd have paid me, it'd have been even better. Which they didn't for quite a long time because the club wasn't in a great place. But I wanted to play for them, as I say. And there was the promises of wages at some point. It did materialise. But I'd worked with Paul Simpson at Carlisle already, and he'd invited me in because I was training at Bolton at the time. And again, when I started playing games, and it was great, but unfortunately, Simo got sacked as well, and that was the start of Stockport's downward spiral.
Yeah, I was reading that Jim Gannon took over. They had a hard time at Motherwell. What did you make of him?
Well, Jim Gannon, I Didi Haman first. Didi Haman took over in the conference, which was it was brilliant. Yeah, you know, I mean, not the man again. Someone else who likes a cigarette now and again, like Russell, nearly as much. If you couldn't find him, you just follow the puff of smoke around somewhere. And he'd join in training, and he was excellent. And what a great down-to-earth fella for what he's done in his career. And and then Jim Gannon came in, and I had lasted a few weeks with him. He's, again, someone who can be quite difficult to get on with. And I was a bit old and a bit ugly to be having to listen to that.
You're sort of losing a bit of interest in football then at that period of time?
Yeah, massively. Unfortunately as well, my father-in-law had been diagnosed with cancer as well. He was only 51 years old, so it was quite a tough period. I left Stockport with a pay-up. They were still paying me, basically, when I left in January. So I went to Hull City training with Nick Barnby because I'm friends with mine's gone now, there we go. friends of the goalkeeper coach at the time there, so he let me to come in and train, so I kept my fitness, and that was over in Hull. So I obviously spent time over at my father-in-law's while he was poorly, and I played a few games for Chester. Just turned up on a Saturday to play. I said, I'm not going to train with you because I'm busy doing other things. Mm-hmm. So training was great. Training, say, with Hull and in the Championship. Being back over there to spend time with my family. And I played a few games for Chester. Unfortunately, my father-in-law passed, which was a tough time. Mm-hmm. Actually, the day before, I actually played a game for Chester. Mm-hmm. So it was a really tough time. And then I'd done my training in a different industry. Halifax came knocking. It was part-time, which I wanted at the time. So I signed for Halifax and Neil Aspin, and we're still good friends, me and Neil now. And that reinvigorated my love for football, actually, because he was a manager who actually gave me respect of a 35-year-old goalkeeper who had played 500-plus games. And we were quite successful as well for a team with, a small budget and no training ground and everything else that went with it.
Yeah, you said that you had done another trade. You got into the barber sort of stuff. Was that something that was always fancied doing?
Nope, not at all. That was again, just fell into it. The man used to cut my hair before my hair disappeared. Asked me what I'm going to do. What I'm going to do when I finish playing football? I said I have not got a clue. So why don't you try this? I was like, no, you're all right. But I ended up going to a crazy American barber. Vidal Sassoon trained it in Nottingham, did a fast track course and absolutely loved it, and then realised I can do what I want with it, because I still wanted to play football at a decent level. I wanted to be my own boss after people like Lee Clark and people like that, so I was not going to have someone else dictating to me again. And it was a really sociable thing. I like to talk to people, I like to meet people, and it's been absolutely superb. I said two shops, we've merged into one big one now, and yeah, it's going well.
Yeah. Did you ever fancy going to the coaching side of things?
I have a goalkeeping academy, so I do teach goalkeepers just locally, just young lads who are struggling, maybe with the bullying aspect of being in goal, because we all know as soon as goal goes in, everyone looks around and blames the keeper. So yeah, I've got a small goalkeeping academy which I just keep small, I don't advertise, I just have a certain amount of numbers which I enjoy. Joined in the other day, couldn't walk the next morning. The old goalkeeper was. But no, professionally, no. I've had offers to be goalkeeper coaching at professional clubs, but it's so unstable. You're talking, if you've got a year, 2 years, and you've done well. And with my children growing up, I didn't want to be spending days and days and days away in hotels again, travelling down south, moving everyone about for not as much money as when you were playing. It'd have been great if I'd made the Premier League money and money wasn't an issue and I didn't have mortgage and bills to pay. Then yeah, it would have been a nice little, yeah, I'll go and be a goalkeeper coach. If I get sacked, it doesn't matter, because I don't have to worry about paying bills. Mm. That isn't the case. So I needed something a bit more stable. And along with this, and obviously the BBC work that I do as well, the commentating, I've got my own show on a Monday night. It all works out quite well.
Yeah, I was going to ask that about the BBC lead stuff, that the Huddersfield commentary, and obviously your own show. How much do you enjoy doing that sort of stuff?
Yeah, I really enjoy it. When I was playing for Huddersfield Town, Paul Ogden, who I work with, who's the commentator for BBC, he would always come to me for interviews because he knew that I wasn't backwards or going forwards. So we had a good relationship. When I retired, he said, oh, make sure you give me a shout when you stop playing. So we did that, and it's been 3 years now, and it's excellent. We travel around, get to see some old mates as well, like go down to Cardiff the other week. Nathan Blake's there, I've not seen him for years since Bolton. Scott Sellers at other places, lads that have played with at all different levels of football, and it's brilliant. And then that's moved on to my own show on a Monday night, covering Leeds, Bradford and Huddersfield Town. And yeah, I love the prep work in it, speaking to people, getting the guests on. I had Neil Aspin on on Monday night, who, my ex Halifax Town manager, obviously one of the Leeds legends from their centenary year. And yeah, it keeps me involved without getting kicked in the face, if you know what I mean. Yeah, or getting sacked too often.
In terms of Huddersfield, that you're watching quite a lot of the times, what have you made of them, the rise to the Premier League and where they are now at this stage of the season?
Obviously, it was very unexpected. They brought David Wagner in, a young man from Germany, just gave him a chance. Didn't start well for him. You could see he wanted to change things. And when he did implement his changes, bring his players in, they were just winning games. Not always spectacular, not always scoring an abundance of goals, but they had that German practicality of doing the jobs properly. And they got to the Premier League, and the fact they stayed there for a year was amazing. The Manchester City draw, there was a draw at Chelsea, and just huge, huge moments beat Manchester United that season as well. So it was great to see. And with me having a local business and being the local businessman living in the town as well, you know, the amount of people come up to you and talk to you, and the positivity with everyone was just amazing. And then obviously that all got massively booted into touch last season when they didn't win any games, didn't score any goals, and it was absolutely atrocious. And as I say, that they got the recruitment wrong, they got the manager wrong, they got so much wrong last season, but the chairman was very poorly, Dean Hoyle, who's a fantastic chairman and fella himself, but they just got it all wrong, and it was atrocious to watch, as was beginning of this season.
Yeah, in terms of being a goalkeeper, players often like certain boots, and did you have like a certain favourite pair of gloves that you wore, or some stuff like that?
Well, I was sponsored by Reebok for a good while, obviously Reebok stayed, and they stayed with me, and they had some decent ones, not always great, but I got a lot of them free, so I could get, I could go through a lot of them. I remember Reebok ringing me and saying to me, "Do you realise you wear more pairs of boots than Ryan Giggs?" And I'm thinking, well, that can't be great. I was a bit picky back in the day. Yule Sport were always the donkey ones. Keith Brannigan wore them. Yeah. I say, he used to always chuck me a pair. And I remember being sponsored by Puma for a bit, and they were awful. But again, they just sent me that much stuff. Yeah. I'd try and make do with them. But now, Yule Sport were always the glove. Boots, I got some Adidas Predator from the PFA used to give you. Boots, even if you were sponsored, they give you a pair of Maldives, pair of studs, and then you get trainers and stuff every year. Every member got these, and I remember saying, I'll try them, and they were absolutely super. I felt like I could kick it a mile, and it always seemed to go where I wanted it to go as well. And then now and again you'd get some boots sent, and they were like flippers, and you felt like the ball wasn't going anywhere you wanted it to go. I was very picky with my kit every season. New bag, new shin pads, new skins, new everything all the time.
So any other player shirts that you acquired through your career?
No, I just kept my own. I wasn't always the most toned of goalkeepers, so taking my shirt off in front of 10, 15, 20,000 was never really going to happen. No, I don't know why. I don't know why I played. I remember playing Arsenal in a game and thinking, if it was David Seaman, I probably would have done. But I actually thought I was better than Meninga at the time, so I wasn't swapping shirts with him. And like Chelsea and players, no, it wasn't really my thing. I like my own shirts. Shop G27, it's Glennon 27. I always wore number 27. G20 Goalkeeping Academy, always that. So now I've got all my shirts from every team I've played for, all the way from the age of 15. They're all in the loft. Sometimes my girls like to go up into the loft and they'll chuck a shirt on now and again and wear it, and hopefully they put them back. Yeah, so no, I've not got. Obviously you've got your trophies, you've got your memorabilia. Mum used to collect the paper cuttings and things like that, and little bits of video. Yeah, and I think the odd DVD as well, but no, not in else's stuff.
And was there any shirts that you ever put on, you're thinking, I'm not wearing that, any hideous goalkeeper tops you had to wear?
Well, one of my worst experiences, when I went to Hull, to say I enjoyed myself for 18 months would probably be an understatement. I put a lot of weight on, I got injured, but a real lot of weight on. It was a bit of a disgrace, to be in all honesty, in myself. And obviously, me and Jan Mobey, I'd come to our natural end. So I was going back up to Carlisle, and I was probably stone and a bit heavier than I was when I left Carlisle a year before, or just over a year. And they gave me this shirt to play my first game, and every bit of it was padded. And I was like, oh no. And the shorts were padded, the shirt was padded. And I remember going over to put my towel in the back of the net, because I think this was Macclesfield away as well, I can't remember where it was. And I heard a Carlisle fan say, "Bloody hell, someone's eating Matt Glennon." And I just thought, no, this has got to end. So I decided, that's when I pulled myself back together, shed the weight, got myself back to, you know what I mean, a decent playing weight. Then obviously got some decent moves along the way, and I ended up playing for over 20 years because, that man, whoever he was, needs to say thank you, because I remember it was like I was wearing a fat suit, and it's like, well, and I see pictures now, and it's just a head, no neck, and then this horrendous Carlisle United. You can get it if you go on Google Images, you can see it, and it's just atrocious. Eddie Stubbard there, and just this huge padded kit. Oh, it was awful.
Excellent stuff. Matt Glennon, that will do us here. Thanks very much for joining us.
No problem at all.
Well, that was episode 15 of the Talking Football Podcast with Matt Glennon. I very much hope you enjoyed it. Thanks again for listening. Remember, you can catch any episode you've missed by visiting us on iTunes, Spotify, SoundCloud, Podbean, and at derekclarksport.co.uk. We're also on Twitter if you just search for @talking_football, and we're on Facebook as well. I hope you can join me again next week for another fantastic guest I've got lined up. Until then, bye for now.